Chapter 1 Night had fallen over Edenheart. The stars sparkled brilliantly in the darkness, and I sucked in the cool air that smelled of the oncoming autumn. All three of my women stood around me and packed up the wagon as we prepared to drive down to Hortensia's home. Daisy, the gorgeous petite brunette, stood at the back of the wagon, her short hair ruffled in the wind, and her golden honey-colored eyes glowed in the darkness. Valerie, the feline woman, sat perched on the driver's seat of the wagon, her sleek brown tail whipped out behind her, and the cat girl tilted her head curiously at me. Ryan loaded supplies into the back of the wagon, her black hair shifted around her red-colored shoulders, and when she lifted her head, the spiraling horns sprouting from the sides of her head brushed the sky. The red-skinned imp was my most recent creation, a combination of the chief constable and an imp I'd found in the aristocrat Josephine's mines. Tonight we had to cover up what we'd done with the chief constable, and we decided that we'd make it look like Hortensia was a brute sympathizer. We'd found out through the grapevine that the chief constable lived in something like a dormitory with the other constables, and I worried that this would be more difficult than I had originally thought. "Do you have the letters?" I asked.
"Yes, Charles."
Daisy breathed, patted her pocket, and smiled softly.
"I wrote them all out this morning, and then I wrote the threatening one later in the afternoon. But I dictated it, and Ryan wrote it out, so the handwriting is different."
"Very clever. We'll sneak in, drop the letters, and then steal all of the evidence that she had against us. We should be in and out within an hour. No one can see us, and if they do, you know what has to happen." Valerie nodded vehemently, raised her hand, curled all of her fingers in, except for her pointer finger, and made a dragging motion across her neck with the digit as she made a low, squelching noise through her lips. "Right, exactly," I nodded. "We cannot have any slip-ups this time. No evidence left at the scene, understand? I only agreed to bring all three of you because there'd be more people to help search the room."
"Hey now," a familiar voice cried out from behind me. "That's an insult to some of us who don't have hands."
"It wasn't an insult. You're just along for the ride, A.B."
"After hours of begging," the brain huffed. "And the only reason you agreed to build this backpack apparatus is because Valerie said that you should."
"That's not true at all. I planned to bring you along. I just wanted to hear all the things you'd say if I didn't."
"I still want those tubes," the brain grumbled. "And if I don't get 'em, I'll protest."
"How? From what Charles told me, a protest is an expression of objection, disapproval, or dissent, correct? How will you, a stationary brain, protest?"
I haven't figured that part out yet. But when I do, it's over for you, Charles Rayburn."
"Well, you could sing loudly at the top of your, lungs?"
Valerie offered, made a face, and then chuckled.
"But you don't have any lungs, so just shout at the top of your voice telepathically."
"Oh, that's what I plan to do," the brain agreed. "Maybe I'll even make up a song about you, Charles, a nasty song that will never leave your head."
"Well, you don't have to do that." I shook the apparatus attached to my back. "You're coming along now, aren't you? There's no need to complain."
"Shall we leave, Charles? The night is young. The stars are bright, and the wind is fresh with change."
"That was so poetic! I'm so glad that Daisy gave you that book of poems this morning. It's really helped your vocabulary."
"Indeed."
Ryan bowed her head.
"It took me about an hour to read, but I read it 4 times in a row. Every time I reread it, I learn a new word, and when I find something I don't understand, Charles explains it to me. I wish I could teach all of you some of the imp language, though they are hard to pronounce without a native tongue, and I doubt that even if you learned it, you would understand half of it."
"Well, I don't remember much of cat language. It was just a bunch of syllables mashed into long, low meows. Sometimes high-pitched ones when we wanted to get a human's attention. But with the aristocrats, that rarely worked. They only wanted the big animals out in the forest."
"Bears didn't have a language. Maybe a few words here and there, but they were mainly aggressive, like when we roared at each other or got into fights with other bears."
"Oh, it sounds fun! fun to be a bear. You often describe taking naps in fields of long grass, eating a lot of honey, and wandering through the forest searching for beehives.
I did enjoy it. I get a lot of my current traits from Delphine, though I hate to admit it. If I have to thank her for something, I guess that would be my elegant way of speaking. If I'd gotten that from the bear, I'd probably be going around grunting and bumping into things.
Well, I'm certainly glad you're not a bear, I tittered. Everyone in the wagon, we have to get a move on before daybreak. By then, people are going to notice that the chief constable has disappeared. Valerie and Ryan scrambled forward, climbed into the bed of the cart, and nestled themselves down beside each other. Daisy hopped up into the driver's seat, turned, smiled down at me, and then offered me her delicate hand. I moved forward, but then paused as a realization suddenly hit me.
What is it, Charles? You look pensive.
If the chief constable disappears, they're going to go looking for her.
Oh, that's true. Edeny won't rest until she knows exactly where the chief constable went.
But, I muttered, if Hortensia were to have killed herself, then there's no question about where she went. If we leave the threatening letter with her body, Edeny won't have a reason to be suspicious.
But we planned on cremating Hortensia's body and killing her horse. Are we not going to do that now?
No, we're not, I uttered, shouldered off AB's apparatus, and handed it over to Ryan. I'll be right back. Stay here. I raced toward my laboratory, thumped down the stairs, slammed the door open, and then stomped toward the closed door of Compartment B. As I passed by my side table, I grabbed a spare tarp, draped it over my shoulder, and then ripped open the metal door of the compartment. Hortensia's still body laid on the floor, and I gazed down at it for a second as I gulped for air. The scarlet-haired woman laid on her side with both hands frozen at her neck. Her contorted face was bruised purple and green, but her single jade eye was tightly closed against the immense pain I assumed she'd gone through when my machine ripped her life force from her body. I paused for a moment. I never really thought about what the human patients went through during the experiments. But here was the proof. Their last moments were sheer agony. Not that I really cared. Most of those who entered into my machine deserved what was coming to them. I laid down the tarp on the floor next to Hortensia's body, came around her, lifted her onto the edge of it, and then rolled her up tightly. I grabbed her by the middle, hauled her off of the floor, and then rested her corpse against my shoulder. I moved for the door and the stairs beyond, and only paused as I snatched up a coil of rope from the counter. I hooked it into the crook of my arm, adjusted Hortensia's body, and hurried back to the wagon.
What are we going to do with it? How are we going to make it look like it was a suicide?
We're going to string her up, and then either place the threatening letter in her hands or at her feet. That way, when her body is found, it'll be one of the first things they see. I stepped up to the open back of the wagon, tossed Hortensia's limp body in, and then placed the coil of the rope on top of it. Then I hurried to the driver's seat, climbed up into the back, and gripped the reins in my hand. I smacked the weather lengths against the backs of the horses, guided them down the drive and down toward the town. Barely any lights were on in the distance, and I knew once we reached the city, no aristocrats would be wandering through the city. I'm almost worried that the constables will catch us, I admitted. They'll be out on patrol this late at night, and a few of them will be coming back from the second shift.
We'll just have to be extra quiet. I can turn invisible and no one will see me in the dark.
We also noticed that you're getting better at it. When we were at Josephine's mines, we couldn't see you even in the daylight.
Really? I've been practicing. I even slept a whole night with it activated, and when I woke up, I was still completely invisible. I'm surprised that none of you noticed that I wasn't there, but I was there. I also snuck around the manor, and no one noticed me, so I think my camouflage is getting better.
Hopefully you won't need it tonight, I chuckled dryly. But if we do, then the rest of us are out of luck. All right, we're approaching town now. You two back there, hunker down, and cover yourselves with that spare tarp in case we come across anyone.
Yes, Charles!
Valerie chirped, grabbed the tarp, wiggled down in the bottom of the wagon, and tucked herself underneath it.
As you wish, Charles.
All right. Here we go. Ready, Daisy?
Yes. If we encounter anyone in the dormitory, I'm sure to make mincemeat of them.
Maybe not mincemeat, but definitely enough to make it look like a wild animal broke in and attacked them. The constable's dormitory should be up ahead, around the corner, the third building to the left. Daisy clamped her lips closed, nodded once, and then formed her tiny hands into fists in her lap. I could tell that the bear girl was anxious, since we'd thought we'd covered our tracks the night we'd murdered the warden, but apparently we hadn't done a good enough job. I, on the other hand, felt great, and I was almost certain that we weren't going to get caught. I wasn't sure why I felt that way. Maybe it was because over the past few weeks, a change had come over me, and I felt like an entirely different man. When I'd created Valerie by accident, I was timid and soft-spoken, but now, with my third monster girl here, I felt totally different. I was a strong-willed man with mates I wanted to protect, and I was never going to let anyone stand in my way again. I'd been pushed around enough by the Duchess, by Delphine, and by so many other women before then. It ended now. Anyone who stood in my way would either die or join me as a monster girl, and if that meant I had to turn every female in the world into one of my creations, so be it. "Here it is," I whispered. "We'll go around the back, where all of the stables are. We'll park inside an empty stall, cover the wagon with a tarp, and then sneak inside. Did everyone hear me?"
"Gotcha, Roger."
"Aye, aye, Captain,"
A.B. chuckled. I leaned my head back and examined the outside of the constable's dormitory as we passed by. The enormous building was 3 stories high, with small white windows every few paces. Only 4 or 5 windows in the entire complex had burning candles in the windows, and I sighed out of relief. If we managed to sneak past those doors, we'd find the chief constable's room fairly easily, if we could figure out exactly where it was. I guided our wagon off the main street, down a darkened back alley, and toward the stables. A few horses neighed in the distance, but there seemed to be no one around this late at night. Once we were inside of the empty stable, I tied off the reins, took A.B.'s apparatus from Daisy's hands, strapped it onto my back, and then helped the bear girl down. I glanced around the stable for a second, took a mental note that most of the horses' stalls were empty, which meant that most of the constables were out on patrol.
"How many constables does Edenhart have?"
Ryan asked, tossed off the tarp, and hopped off the back of the wagon.
"From looking at the stables, there has to be at least more than 20.
"No, no, we don't have that many," I shook my head. "When Edenhart was built, it was supposed to be much larger than it is. They were prepared for a city at least 3 or 4 times larger than it is now. So this building can accommodate at least 150 constables. But I think we have 20 at best. Most of the time, we barely have that. I think the lowest amount of constables we had at one time was 10. And they were desperately searching for people to join the force."
"Do you think the Queen sent more over with Hortensia?"
Daisy asked. "I believe so. I've seen them out and about during the day on their patrols. They were women I'd never seen before in the city, so they have to come from the capital."
"Why does the Queen have such a sudden interest in Edenhart?"
Daisy tapped her chin.
"From what you've told us, the Queen never really got involved with Edenhart's affairs in the past. Why is she doing so now?"
"I have no idea. It must have to do with the rivalry between the two of them. But that makes me wonder, why do the Queen and Edeny hate each other so much? There has to be some reason."
"We won't find out unless we force the Duchess to tell us. And Edeny would never tell us willingly."
"All right, let's head inside. Valerie, why don't you go inside first? Use your power, scope out the floor, and make sure no one is out and about."
"I'm on it."
The feline woman giggled, winked at me, and then phased out of view. The only telltale sign that Valerie was even there was the tiny shift of gravel beneath her feet. Other than that, the cat girl was completely undetectable to the human eye. Daisy, Ryan, and I hid in the shadows as the door into the dormitory creaked open, held there for a second, and then slid shut with a soft groan. We waited, and the seconds ticked by longer than I would have liked. I already knew that Valerie was invisible and no one would see her, but that didn't stop me from worrying that she'd be caught. But right as my anxiety reached a peak, the door to the dormitory creaked open, Valerie leaned out, waved, and whispered,
"Come on! The coast is clear! No one is awake! I peeked through all the keyholes. They have candles burning, but they're all tucked away in their beds, snoring logs.
Oh, thanks, science, I chuckled, turned back toward the wagon, and grabbed the tarp-covered body. Let's get this inside before anyone wakes up and hears us and comes out to investigate.
Let me get that, Charles,
Daisy smiled. No, it's okay. I started, but the brunette stepped forward, grabbed the corpse, and lifted it off the wagon as if it weighed nothing. Daisy hiked it up, rested the body against her shoulder, adjusted it once, and then assuredly stepped toward the dormitory. The beautiful bear girl only turned back once, smiled at me, and then jerked her head toward the building.
Come on, we have to hurry before anyone comes back. You must love strong women, Charles. Shall I carry you too?
Ryan nudged my shoulder, chuckled softly, and then moved toward me as if to sweep me off my feet. I scuttled out of reach, placed my hand on her shoulder, laughed, and then shook my head. I may love strong women, but I'm no damsel, and I'm certainly not in distress, so no thank you, I can walk myself.
You can carry me if you want, Ryan. I love it when strong women carry me.
I think you're fine where you are now, A.B. You begged for Charles to carry you, so that's where you'll stay.
God damn it,
the brain grumbled. Shouldn't have complained so much, buddy. Then maybe someone else other than me would be carrying you.
I'll hear you. Maybe one of them will carry me on the way home, but who knows? A brain can dream, can't he?
You'll have to ask one of them. All right, time to keep quiet. We're going in.
Well, I don't have to, A.B. tutted. The only people who can hear me are you, Valerie, Daisy, and Ryan, so I can talk as much as I want, and none of the constables will hear me.
But for the sake of our consternation, I sniggered, but A.B. cut me off.
All right, the brain griped. I'll keep my trap shut while you guys take care of the important business.
Ryan and I hurried toward the open door and the other two monster girls. We all slipped inside together, and I examined the large room beyond. We stood in what seemed to be a massive common room with enormous couches, rows and rows of bookshelves, and a huge crackling fireplace. To our left was an open doorway, and when I peeked inside, I saw a spacious kitchen and a long table with countless empty chairs.
Look at this!
Valerie ushered me over.
It looks to be a floor plan of some sort. There are names on each of the rooms.
That'll make it so much easier to find Hortensia's room.
Daisy breathed, let go of the body for a second, and ran a finger over the paper.
Here we go. It looks like Hortensia's room is on the third floor, all the way at the end. She has the largest room in the entire complex, and she's the chief constable.
Which way?
That way, I pointed down the darkened hall to our right. We just have to climb the stairs at the end, and then unlock the door with Hortensia's key.
All right. I'll lead the way, just in case, okay? I'll keep a lookout if anyone comes down the hall, so follow after me, and then stop moving if I give you a signal.
What's the signal?
I'll just reveal my hand, and wave for all of you to stop or turn around.
Sounds like a good plan. Now let's go. I want to get this finished immediately. Valerie phased out of view for the second time, and we listened as she thumped ahead of us. Then we moved painstakingly slow down the hall, but none of the lamps on the walls were lit, and the sounds of soft snoring escaped through the closed doors. I was more worried about the climb up the stairs in the walled-off stairwell. The sounds of our feet would be louder and echo down the halls. Once we made it to the stairs, I glanced up at the higher levels and then turned back to my women.
We need to be extra careful here. Our footfalls will echo in this space, and if anyone hears, all of this will take a darker turn.
Maybe I should carry the corpse. That way our defense is at the ready.
We all turned and pointedly looked toward Daisy. The brunette's eyes widened, and her mouth opened as if to speak.
I'm the defense?
Well, yes. You can tear fully grown men limb from limb. I watched you do it with my very own eyes.
I guess that makes sense. All right, Ryan, you take the body. I'll stay up front with Valerie, then. But what if someone comes up from behind? What will the two of you do then?
I could probably throw a few punches. I did fisticuffs Milton rather well before we killed him.
You did? You looked so strong and handsome while you did it, Charles. It was breathtaking. And that is the reason I've chosen him to be my mate. You are handsome, strong, and healthy. We will have resilient and robust offspring. Once we return home, you must mate with me at once and fill me with your fertile seed. I wish to be impregnated as soon as possible.
That's great and all, A.B. murmured. But I don't think it's the best place to be discussing mates and offspring. Maybe when we get home, we're on a mission right now. A.B. is right. We'll discuss those things once we arrive home. Right now, we need to get Hortensia's body back into her room.
Daisy nodded, shifted the corpse off her shoulder, handed it over to the red-skinned imp, and then came to stand next to Valerie. The two monster women climbed the stairs together as quietly as they could, and Ryan and I followed after them. The stunning black-haired woman adjusted the body over her shoulder, raised her head toward the stairs above, smiled over at me, and then began to climb. It took only a few minutes for us to reach the top, and Valerie stood with her body pressed against the wooden grain of the door. The feline woman rested a hand on the door handle, swung the door open a crack, peeked through, and then slipped in with the rest of us behind her. The hall was deathly silent except for a few loud snores here and there, and we crept past them on our tiptoes. The floor beneath our feet creaked occasionally, but not loud enough to actually wake someone from a deep sleep.
We're almost there. We have to be in and out, though, as fast as we can. But we also have to be thorough. Do we all understand? We can't leave any evidence behind, and we have to take everything that Hortensia had on Josephine and us.
I understand why we're taking all of the evidence that has to do with us. But why are we taking the evidence against Josephine?
Josephine is our friend. She's also a brute sympathizer. If Edeny or any of the other aristocrats find out that information, she'll be thrown in an insane asylum, and we'll never see her again.
You've never met Josephine, though.
But that doesn't mean I can't like her. I can be friends with her from afar, even if she doesn't know I exist. She's still a really nice woman, and she likes Charles, so I like her.
That's right. Josephine is the only aristocrat that's ever been kind to us. We don't want anything to happen to her for that reason, but as Daisy said, Josephine is a brute sympathizer, and in a way, we are also brute sympathizers. You're in love with a man, aren't you, Ryan?
I am,
the black-haired woman concurred.
Well, then that makes you one, too. That also makes Josephine your friend, too, and we will do anything to protect her.
Aww, Charles likes Josephine back.
I will admit, I do like Josephine. I mean, who wouldn't? I bet almost all of her workers, her consorts, and servants are enamored with her. She treats all of them so kindly. It's very different from the way all of the other aristocrats treat their men.
I hope that someday Josephine can become one of our sisters, and I can formally meet her. She sounds like a wonderful person to know.
Wait! I hear something!
All four of us paused, turned slightly, and then listened for anything in the distance. I couldn't hear anything, and it seemed that Daisy and Ryan didn't either, but Valerie's pointed ears twitched agitatedly. Her blue eyes glowed in the dim light around her. Her sleek brown tail twitched at the tip, and her knees bent slightly as she lowered herself closer to the ground.
"What is it?" I asked.
"I don't know, but it sounds like something is shuffling around."
Valerie listened intently to the sounds for a few more seconds, but just as suddenly, her ears relaxed, lifted, and then swiveled toward the door at the end of the hall.
It must have been nothing. Let's carry on.
Right as we all turned back toward Hortensia's door a few feet away, a door behind us crashed open with a thunderous bang.